morning, everybody. Welcome to It's a New Day. You're listening to 1180 WFYL. Tim Liebig live in the studio this morning with another episode of It's a New Day. We're so glad that you're with us. We are spreading things all around here today. And as you know, we get a lot of awesome guests that share some pretty incredible stories. And our guest this morning is Paul Engel. Paul, you with us?
I'm here. Thank you.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Folks, let me tell you a little bit about Paul. Paul Engel founded the Constitution Study after realizing how little most Americans know about the supreme law of the land and how this lack of knowledge has impacted our rights and freedoms. After reading a report that found that 36% of Americans could not name a single freedom protected by the First Amendment. Paul, you started a small Constitution study in his hometown upstate New York, and after success of that study, decided to expand the audience, starting the Constitution Study with a goal of providing resources everyday Americans can use to learn about the Constitution and help start studies of their own. And folks, if you've been listening to WFYL for any length of time, you know how we feel about the Constitution. Paul spent 30 years working in the IT industry, and more than 20 as a Sunday school teacher and a part-time preacher. He uses skills that he developed in the IT area and studying teaching about the Bible to help him not only explain the Constitution and its history, but to do so in a way that people of all ages, even me, can understand. One person described Paul's teaching style as, he teaches even the most complex ideas in a way that my grandmother can understand. More than just reiterating what others have said, another reader describes Paul's work this way. For me, the Constitution Study has opened my eyes to the many untaught areas of the U.S. Constitution. Paul has published essays on the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the 16th and 17th Amendments, available on Amazon.com. He's also finishing a book, The Constitution Study, and developing an online study for everyone to enjoy. All this while writing web articles, podcasting, and answering questions at his website, constitutionstudy.com. Paul now lives in a farm in Middle Tennessee with his wife of over 30 years and a variety of animals. Paul, wow, that's just a phenomenal bit of information there. I do want to ask, the animals are outside though, right?
Oh, no, they're inside and outside. We have, and there's a whole story behind that. We have a couple dogs, a couple cats, and I rent my land out for grazing. So I've got about a dozen cows, about 8 or 10 calves, and one bull that roam around my land. So it's an interesting way of life.
Well, you know what? It sounds like a wonderful and peaceful way of life to me, and I think you're blessed by being there, Paul. Now, the one thing that we were talking about the Constitution and the Constitution Study. This has become your life. I do like something that I read on your website is you're studying the Bible. Why can't we study the Constitution like we study the Bible? And you know that's it's so important that we understand the law of the land. And a lot of people don't, and you know they think like they do of the Bible. This is old, something that's been written many, many years ago, and it doesn't have its place anymore. And nothing could be further from the truth. Am I right?
Absolutely. And in fact, whereas we're taught the Bible is old and dusty, and we don't need to worry about it anymore, very often people are taught that the Constitution is difficult to read, it's complex, you need a law degree to understand it. And that's just not true. It was written so that 18th century farmers could understand it. In fact, the Federalist Papers, the essays and articles written in New York newspapers to explain to the public what this new Constitution was about to enhance the chance of ratification is actually more difficult to read than the Constitution itself. So, I mean, the 18th century farmer was able to pick up and read this document. It's only about 8,000 words. Most of them are still words that are in common use today. Sometimes they're spelled a little funny because it used British English rather than American English. Mm-hmm. But it's there. It's plain English. And we've been taught that we're not allowed to really understand it and interpret it. It has to be kept separate and special so that only the high priest on the Supreme Court can actually tell you what this says, which really isn't that different than the high churches saying that the common man could not have the Bible. It had to be held by the elite because they were the only ones who could actually understand it.
And there are still churches today that believe that in a large way, like the Catholic Church. They don't teach the Bible. They don't, you know, there's a lot of people that I know that grew up Catholic, don't have Bibles in their homes. So you're absolutely right. But it is important, and it is time that we know this, and it's time that we understand what the Constitution is all about. We're just wrapping up Liberty Week. Last week was what we call Liberty Week, and Independence Day, 4th of July. A lot of people think it's time to have fireworks and hot dogs and a day off from work and, you know, the first cookout of the year and things like that. But it's so much more. I'd like you to maybe speak to Independence Day a little bit and maybe share with our listeners a little bit of the history of that, Paul.
So everyone thinks of 4th of July and, again, the Declaration of Independence, but there's two things I really think I'd like to focus on today. One is the Declaration of Independence didn't simply appear out of thin air on July 4th. It actually started out as what's called the Lee Resolution. Richard Henry Lee in June 7th of 1776, made a resolution in the Continental Congress that the colonies are and right ought to be free and independent states and absolved from all allegiances with the British crown. Hmm. He also thought that there should be a method of forming foreign alliances and that a plan of confederation be prepared so that these new free and independent states would have a way of working together. It's interesting when we celebrate the Independence Day with fireworks because John Adams thought that we would actually celebrate July 2nd as our Independence Day with fireworks and firearms and parties and even honoring, you know, religious references, religious studies, devotions, because July 2nd is the day that the Second Continental Congress actually adopted the part of the Lee Resolution that said these ought to be free and independent states. Mm. Now, when the resolution was first proposed, a group of five gentlemen, including Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, I believe John Adams, the Committee of Five, as they're known, started drafting the Declaration of Independence. And after the resolution was passed on the 4th, on the 4th is when the Continental Congress actually approved the language of the official declaration. When I post up on Independence Day, I have a lot of people that came back to me and said, well, you know, we actually declared independence on the 2nd. And I'm like, no, we decided to be independent on the 2nd. We actually announced it. We declared it on the 4th. That's when it was actually done. But the document wasn't actually signed. It was only signed by two people, Thomas Jefferson and Carl Thompson, on the 4th. It wasn't until August, until all the states had basically said, yes, okay, we agree that all those names that we see, you know, including the giant, you know, John Hancock, were actually placed on parchment.
Hmm. Continue.
Really,
yeah.
Interesting thing is, if we look at the title of the document, we all know it as the Declaration of Independence, but its actual title is the Unanimous Declaration of 13 United States of America.
Hmm.
We have 13 states, and the United States, United, is not capitalized. Because united is an adjective. It's not a noun. July 4th did not declare a new nation. It declared 13 new states on par with the state of Great Britain. They actually say that in the language of the document. Hmm. They refer to the state of Great Britain. We created 13 independent states. They were free. They were sovereign. And they've joined together in a union or confederation initially in order to protect themselves because the men who did this knew their lives were in jeopardy. They had just committed treason against the crown.
Against England, right.
Exactly. So, you know, we celebrate with hot dogs and cookouts and fireworks and parades, and those are all wonderful things. But I prefer, instead of wishing America a happy birthday, as we so often do, recognize what was birthed were originally 13 independent states that joined together in 1787 into the Union we now call the United States of America. 37 other states have freely and independently joined this Union. And that idea that states retain power is very much a part not only of the Declaration, but of the Constitution mm-hmm. and the rules that were established about what powers were delegated to the central government, what we now call the federal government, and what powers were retained by the states.
And that carries on today. Do you think that the men that signed this in the very beginning had any inclination that there were going to be 37 additional states joining these 13?
Well, they made a mechanism for states to join the Union. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the point of the Declaration, maybe not. They didn't know if they were going to survive. You know, they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to create these new states. They weren't sure they were going to survive.
Right.
When they created the Constitution and the Union that it created, they included originally a mechanism by which other areas could become other states could join this Union. They recognized they were part of a much larger continent. They knew there was a tremendous amount of land west of the existing colonies, the existing states. So they knew that if they were going to grow, they would want to have these new states join. So that's why it's in the original part of the Constitution as opposed to one of the amendments.
Right. It's just an amazing piece of our history that and I would bet that there's not a whole lot of people that can even look at it that way or ever have looked at it that way. The 13 free and independent states that declared independence. It was not the United States at that point. And that's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, and it truly impacts the way you look at us as a nation or as a union. Because we often think of checks and balances. We're taught in school, you know, we have three branches of government because there are checks and balances. We completely miss the fact that there is a check and balance between the state governments and the federal government. The Senate originally was not, senators were not elected by the people. They were appointed by the state legislatures because the Senate was designed to be the representatives of the states. That's why we have two houses. You have the House of Representatives, apportioned by population, that represent the people of the United States of America. And then you had the Senate, evenly divided among the different states. That's job was to represent the states of the United States of America. So that anything what we now call the federal government would do would have to be not only approved by the representatives of the people, but the representative of the states.
Mm-hmm.
It explains why the people don't elect the president. The people choose electors. Actually, the states choose electors to choose a president because the role of president is not to be the representative of the people. He or eventually she is the representative of the union in foreign affairs. His job is to execute the laws of the union and to be their representative in foreign affairs. It's why the push to abolish the Electoral College or effectively bypass it is so dangerous because we lose this idea of whatever state you live in, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, that is a sovereign state with authority over its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we transfer that power to Washington, the more we become serfs of a powerful central government.
Hmm. Not a place. And that's exactly what we were walking away from in 1776.
Exactly. There's so much of what we see, at least what I see in Washington, parallels the Declaration. You know, of the 27 reasons given for separating from Great Britain, they enumerate 27 grievances. 10 of them actually had to do with the passing and executing of laws.
Hmm.
And you see situations where a colony would pass a law. And the king would say, nope, don't like that law. In fact, many of the colonies tried to outlaw slavery long before they became states. Virginia, I know, did. Pennsylvania, I believe, did. Mm-hmm. But when they passed those laws, the king basically said, no, you are a subject of the crown. Great Britain has slavery. You cannot outlaw slavery in your colony. Which is really interesting when you hear people being taught that we are founded on slavery. No, we were founded in many ways to try and get rid of slavery.
Try to do away with these things. And there are just so many people today that I think if they were more educated in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, you wouldn't have as many arguments as you have today. But it's either they don't understand what they're looking at, or they've never seen it, or they're just simply trying to change things up, right? Something different. And I think, unfortunately, that may be the case in a lot of areas.
Yeah, you know, I think we would still have arguments and disagreements. I think that's human nature. I think the difference would be part the tone and the intensity, maybe not the intensity, the direction that some of those disagreements go. You know, when George Washington left the presidency, during his farewell address, he warned that the spirit of party, the spirit of revenge that it entails, would lead towards basically a party's, basically when they would come into power, taking revenge on their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
We see that today. That's not a surprise. That was 220 some odd years ago, 240 years ago almost, that the president said, watch out, this will be a problem. I think the difference is if we read our Constitution, if we were taught it properly in school, because a lot of what we're taught about the Constitution just is not true. And a quick reading of it is just makes that obvious. Then we would be having debates less about things like, the Bladensburg Cross. I was just reading an article about the Bladensburg Cross and how seeing a cross offended someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, so what? You know, I'm old enough to remember when the saying, I may vehemently disagree with you, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, when that was commonplace.
Right.
Nowadays, our answer to disagreements or even to bad speech is not more speech. We want to restrict speech. And we forget that as soon as you give a government a power to restrict someone else's speech, they have the power to restrict your speech.
Exactly.
And I think that's why John Jay said reading and studying the Constitution was so important, and to teach it to the next generation, because by recognizing their rights, they will recognize when they are infringed and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. Since we don't read and study our Constitution, since we don't teach the rising generation, we don't recognize what our rights are. We are not prepared to defend or assert them. So we shouldn't be surprised that many of the rights we claim to cherish are being taken away from us every day. And most Americans not only don't realize they're being taken, they are asking the government to take them away from them.
Yeah, and they don't know. But as soon as you take the rights away from one person, then it's affecting all the others as well. And I think they just don't see it this way, you know.
Well, the same people that want to, whether it's they want to break up and clam up Facebook and Google, or they want to deny hate speech, they want to ban hate speech, or they want to go ignore the requirements for warrants because these people are really, really dangerous, forgetting that those are the same people that can deny your speech. They can control what you can and cannot do. Anybody that will, you know, can be searched without a warrant, those same people can search you without a warrant. And it's there, it's obvious, we just don't bother looking.
Yeah, it's written, and it's how this country was founded, and it's how this country has survived all of these 240 years. You know, it's and I have in my hand a copy of the Constitution of the United States, and it's so important that that everybody know it and everybody understand it. Paul, your website, and we'll touch on this again a little bit later towards the end, but. The Constitution study, it's written in a way that, and I'll be honest, I've darted around it a little bit, but this is really put out there in a way that anybody can understand the Constitution. My question to you is, how can we get people to read this? How can we get people to really go onto, say, your website and learn about it?
Well, if I had the answer to that, I'd have I wouldn't, we wouldn't have this problem because we'd be doing it. I think part of it is we've been taught, well, we were originally taught history. Recently, we've been taught social studies. When I was in school, we didn't have history. We were taught social studies. We were taught names and places and dates, and we were not taught the stories behind them.
Right.
And when you start getting into some of the stories behind them, they stop becoming these pale, two-dimensional characters, and they begin becoming alive. They seem real. They seem human. You see men and women, black and white, struggling with these issues and ideas on how to deal with them. I think when we start reading the Constitution with an eye towards understanding what it says, and one of the foundational principles is that we are here to help to understand the words on parchment, not to infuse them with our meaning, but to get meaning from them. So when we conduct studies, when I conduct studies, it's amazing the number of people almost every session will say, well, wait a second. If the Constitution says this, why do we do that? And I think it's as we begin to be exposed to the Constitution, not as some dry legal document that says exactly the opposite of the words on paper, which is what a lot of our legal opinions come up with. But understanding them, these are the works of men that are trying to establish a system that will protect your rights and your liberties. And to do that, it requires your participation. And I think that's probably the hardest leap is everybody wants their rights protected. Everybody likes the idea of liberty, but we seem hesitant to recognize that with those come responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to paraphrase a famous comic, with great power, with great opportunities, with great freedoms come great responsibilities.
You know, that was Spider-Man that said that.
That was Spider-Man's uncle.
His uncle, yeah.
But it's
very, very important.
We've been given a great gift in the freedoms that in the liberties that we've been inherited as Americans. Whether you're born here or whether you came here and were naturalized, there's a tremendous inheritance. And sadly, like many of the great wealths of the past, what we have inherited from our forebears, we are leaving to the next generation greatly diminished.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, you know, the freedoms that were around when I was born are not the freedoms that my daughter inherits as she begins to take on the mantle of being a citizen of the state of Tennessee and of the state and of the United States of America.
Yeah.
We have, you know, President Reagan said, paraphrasing him, you don't inherit, we don't transmit freedom through the bloodstream.
No.
It has to be worked at. It has to be toiled at. And if we don't, then one day our children will wonder, we'll find ourselves telling our children what it was like to live in a free country.
Yeah. Remember when. George Washington said that the power under the Constitution will always be in the people. And it
starts out with those three famous words, we the people.
Yes. And it you know, people don't get that. They don't know that. And by God, they want to try to change that. Paul, what would you say is the most interesting fact about the Declaration of Independence that people don't know?
We have all been taught in school that we declared independence from Great Britain because of taxation without representation,
right.
It is a mantra beaten into our heads from the first day we start learning American history. If you read the Declaration, as I said, there are 27 specific grievances that the American colonists had against the king.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think taxation without representation came in out of a list of 27? It came in 17th.
I was going to say it was down the road. It was down the list.
Yeah. It didn't even make the top half. We did not separate from Great Britain because of money. Money was one of the reasons. As I said, 10 of the reasons listed had to do with laws their execution, and there are another four or five that deal specifically with out-of-control judges, judges that are not held to account for issuing justice, but are cronies of the king, the state, the central government of Great Britain.
So it just stands to bear that it is critical for especially the up and coming generations to learn this information and share this information. It's up to us to share it to those people that are coming behind us, that they need to learn this the right way. Absolutely the right way.
Yeah, it is up to us individually, because the government won't do it. What government entity is going to teach the population that the government is not in control?
Yeah.
That the people have power over government. That everybody you elect works for you, works in your name. They are your agent.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hire them and you can fire them. But what government school is going to teach people that? Because it decreases the power of the very bureaucracy that's running the government school.
So this is the beginning of change. And you are working very hard to see that happens.
I'm working very hard to educate people. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of problems in America. There's a lot of problems in government, in Washington, in the state houses. And there's often a discussion of how do we fix it. And regardless of what someone looks at, ultimately, I think the root cause of the problem is, and I don't mean this derogatory, it's an ignorant electorate.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorant in the sense they do not know. They have not been taught. It's not they can't. It's not that they can't learn. It's not that they can't know. It's that they haven't been taught. So they don't know. So problems that could be dealt with are left to fester until they grow to the point that we see them as a giant monster that we just cannot defeat.
But it's really very simple. Studying the Constitution, and I think you even have on your website, that's not as hard as people think. There's not a lot of words in there. It's really quite simple.
Yeah, as I said, it's only about 8,000 words. It takes the average, if you're a proficient reader, 20 minutes, you know, maybe another five to read the Declaration. That's all. And there is so much. When I sat down to write the book, you know, I had conducted studies. I had worked with people. When I sat down to spend time to look at the individual clauses, I find so many beautiful, imaginative, incredible ideas in those words that if we bothered to implement them, would make a nation where, would it be perfect? No. But guess what? You could find a state in the Union that agreed with you enough that you would be content there,
mm-hmm.
that your right to express yourself would not be infringed. Your right to be secure and not be raided by government would be protected at all levels by all members of government. Your ability to pursue happiness, whether it is by getting a good job, buying a nice house, whatever that is, you would be protect the government will protect your right to do that,
mm-hmm.
rather than looking for a government that is going to provide them for you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was raised in a way that you got to work for what you have, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, that provides you some sort of, you know, you feel good about yourself when you're actually working towards and not just getting. Well, you know, that takes us to another kind of, we're in the sort of the middle of our conversation here. And I know that one of the things that you want to discuss, Paul, by the way, folks, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Paul Engel. Paul Engel is the founder of the Constitution Study, and you can find that by going to constitutionstudy.com. Some great information about our Constitution, Declaration of Independence. And Paul, the conversation so far has just been really phenomenal. One of the things I know that you wanted to discuss is You know, we got a census coming up, and there's a lot of conversation. You talk about we the people. Who is we the people, right? It's just like saying, who is your neighbor? As it tells us in the Bible, love your neighbors. Neighbors are everyone that God puts on this earth. Now, the question has come up about the citizenship. Now, we are the United States, and we are a country of laws. And those laws that were put into place a long time ago. And what's wonderful about this country is these freedoms that are protected are ours. And we, you know, God has given us these freedoms through these writings. And it's important that we go about them the right way, because there are laws put into place. Anybody is welcome here. Anybody is welcome here. But there's the right way and there's the wrong way, just like going all the way back to the beginning of time. There's the right way and the wrong way. So the question has come up about the census that's coming up next year, where the Supreme Court has voted not to put the citizenship question on the census. And I'm not so sure. I don't really understand how that really came to be. So I would like very much to understand, in your words, how this did come to be, where the Supreme Court of the United States is now making the decision on this.
Well, again, it comes from our lack of understanding. I'll give you the answer ahead of time, then explain it.
Okay.
The reason is the American people, because we do not know the type of government, the structure of government created by the Constitution. We do not know where the power lies. We do not know where the checks and balances lie. We have allowed those in Washington and those in our state houses to so warp and twist this system of government that it doesn't resemble the Constitution much anymore. Hmm. It's a facade. So in this particular situation, the question of citizenship has been on the census for well over 100 years, somewhere approaching 150 years. In fact, I think since the 1950 census through the 2000 census, it was in the primary questionnaire. Now, I have a lot of issues with how the census is handled, with the questions that are asked, but that's beside the point. What the Secretary of Commerce and the Department of Commerce decided to do is to restore that question. That question had been on the census. It was removed in the 2010 census by the Obama administration. He simply wanted to restore it for reasons basically of it was the best way to get certain data. Okay? Now, this was very quickly challenged by, among others, the state of New York, and they filed suit and it eventually went to the Supreme Court. Now, regardless of your opinion about whether or not citizenship should be a question, what the court did, I have a hard time coming up with adjectives that I can use to describe just how awful what the court did. See, in reading the opinion of the court written by Chief Justice Roberts, they noted one, or among other things, that the enumeration clause permits Congress and by extension the secretary to inquire about citizenship on the census questionnaire. So the court agrees that the enumeration clause, the clause that says every 10 years you're going to number all the people for the apportionment of representatives in the House and the apportionment of taxes, that can include a citizenship question. They agree to it, no question. Mm-hmm. They later say that the secretary, the decision he made was supported by the evidence before him. In other words, the secretary, in looking at how to gather certain data, looked at the evidence, looked at other options, determined that asking the citizenship question in the census was the best way to do that. The court recognizes that this was the best way to do it. So they recognize that citizenship can constitutionally be in the census questionnaire, and that the secretary did it based on evidence before him. Nice and simple, right? Open and shut case. We should have the citizenship question on the questionnaire, but not to this court.
Hmm.
I'm going to quote from the opinion. It is hardly improper for an agency head to come into office with policy preferences and ideas, discuss them with affected parties, sound out other agencies for support, and work with staff attorneys to substantiate the legal basis for a preferred policy. Yet, viewing the evidence as a whole, this court shares the district court's conviction that the decision was reinstate a citizenship question cannot adequately be explained in terms of DOJ's request for improved citizenship data to better enforce the Voting Rights Act.
Hmm.
All right, so this is legalese, which makes my head hurt.
Yeah.
But the court is saying, listen, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing improper with a head of an agency having a policy preference they wish to implement. There's nothing wrong with discussing it, with seeking support for it, with working with attorneys to find a legal basis to implement that policy. However, the court then turns around and says, but we don't think that he adequately explained why he did this. So you have a court saying it is legal, he did it properly, but we don't agree with it.
Now, how does that make sense?
I don't know about you, but that to me is a big deal, and it's a big deal almost nobody is talking about. Right? We have a separation of a checks and balance, a separation of powers within the federal government. Right? The term separate but equal is wrong. They are separate, they are not equal, but the important is they're separate. And the power is divided so that they could check and balance each other. Right?
Exactly.
Now, as I've already said, of the 27 grievances listed in the Declaration of Independence, 10 specifically had to do with the passing and executing of laws.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let me kind of rephrase some quotes from the Declaration, but put it in the context not of King George, but of the Supreme Court or the court system as a whole.
Okay.
They have refused their assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. This is a perfect example. They look at the law. There's nothing wrong with it. It's constitution, but they refuse their assent. They have forbidden governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation until their assent should be obtained. How often do we hear of state laws being put on hold? Injunctions placed by federal courts until they put their blessing on it.
Hmm.
Right? There are many others, but here are two right in this that directly relate to this case. And believe it or not, this one's a little tricky. I'm going to have to follow up with this one. For taking away our constitution, the constitutions of the states, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government by overturning state laws made in pursuance of state constitutions regarding powers not yet delegated to the federal government. You see, all of these are grievances, are almost verbatim grievances. The only thing I did in those quotes was change he to they.
Right.
And properly adjust the syntax to match. You see, if we look at what the Supreme Court is doing, and specifically what they've done in this case, it is almost the exact reason we separated from Great Britain. And this has happened because the American people have been derelict in their duty to oversee the elected representatives.
Well, so it all comes back to we the people. And
it does.
And putting the right individuals I'm going to quote some stuff that we've said here at the station so many times. We got to get out and vote. We've got to be very serious about it. And we have to look at the individuals that are running for office and make a decision based on this Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence, not on what they've done in their lives or even the fact that, you know, they're Medal of Honor winners and things like this. What's important is, are they going to uphold the Constitution? And if we're not taking that seriously, and we're just kind of going with whatever the advertising are saying, is or do whatever our friends or family are doing, that's not taking it seriously, and that's what put us in the, you know, what has us in the boat that we're in today. I think, am I off guide here?
I would only make one modification. It's not simply what they say they're going to do; it's what have they done.
Mm-hmm.
Every public officer, state and federal, their oath or affirmation of office has to include language to support the Constitution of the United States. Everyone, state governors, state representatives, House of Representatives, senators, everybody is swears an oath to support the Constitution. Yet, look at we're in my version of silly season, right? We're in the electoral race. We just had a debate amongst the Democratic candidates, and there are two very obvious things that we look at. If you follow the news, if you follow the polls, one, the presidential race has turned into a beauty contest. Mm-hmm. Notice it's not about how often they're not talking about policies, but they're talking about, well, he's an old white guy, or it's a black woman, or it's a gay white guy. We're worried about things like the color, the sexual preferences, the age of the people. Never once have they asked a question about, have they supported the Constitution? And I don't mean to say, well, yes, I support the Constitution. No, show me. Show me where you took a stand and said, no, this is wrong, because I can show you a laundry list of unconstitutional things the federal government does every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about federal representatives. Why are the states not standing up and saying, no, federal government, that is outside of your purview, and we are not going to help you do it? No, that is that check and balance between the states and the feds. But the other thing you notice, at least I notice, is that the vast majority of the political campaigns, the political platforms, are about bribery.
Yes.
It's about bribing. Alexis de Tocqueville said the American Revolution will succeed, the American Republic will succeed until Congress figures out it can bribe the American people with their own money.
Yep.
Congress has figured it out. Most people, what do we say? They vote their pocketbook.
Sure.
What happened to voting their liberties? They vote their party. What happened to voting the Constitution? So we vote people into office. We do not hold them accountable. All we do is ask them to continue sending us our bribes.
Yep.
Okay. So
what's in it for me?
One of the most common political jokes is, how can you tell when a politician is lying?
His lips are moving.
Exactly. But remember, we hired that person to represent us.
Well, that's,
they work in our name. What does it say about us that we not only routinely hire people that lie to us, the ones that do it the best, we keep sending back again and again and again, knowing they are lying to us? What does that say to the world when the representatives of the American people are a bunch of liars, hypocrites, and lawbreakers?
Yeah, exactly. That's an old joke, and I said that, and there are some people in my life that are the kind of leaders that we need in this country. And we're even talking about, you know, drilling down even below the states into our individual communities and into our counties. And there's, you know, that type of government. And it is so important to know who it is that you're working with, know who it is. But you got to give it damn, folks. You really do. And are they backing this Constitution? But I think you hit the nail on the head, Paulsby. You know, you listened, and I couldn't listen to the Democratic debates. I really couldn't, but because I already know what they're going to say. But here's
my
the thing:
my stomach couldn't handle it.
Oh no! I mean, but you talk about the bribery, and it's like, ooh, I don't want to say that. But the people think, oh, it's good to give everybody everything for free. Why isn't that good? And well, what about all the people that worked for it? They won't say it's good, will they? So. It's setting us up against each other, and it's really a very, very dangerous place to be. How do we change it? We, like you said, we hire these people, and we have to get back to hiring these people. it's silly season. We're coming up towards a voting time. And now is the time, right now is the time, folks, you need to learn this Constitution. You need to understand it. You need to see what it says. And you need to start looking at these people that want your vote and see how much of this they know. Wouldn't you love, Paul, to quiz some of these campaigns on the Constitution?
You know, there is a part of me, I admit, that would like that. I would much rather have, to me, more important than quizzing them is having people who look at what they have done.
Do the research.
Not simply the research, although research is important, but you know, almost every one of the people, everyone who's running for president has a track record. Mm-hmm. If we know we are hiring liars, then maybe we shouldn't listen to what they say. We should look at what they do. We should demand of people who are working for us that they abide by their oath of office to support the Constitution, that they abide by their responsibility to you know, whether it's the president to faithfully execute the laws of the United States or of the Congress to not only pass laws that are only authorized by the Constitution, but to hold their responsibility of impeachment of federal officers, federal judges, and that their oversight extends to the laws that they have passed, to take that seriously. But they don't. Almost everybody in Congress and even in the state legislatures is more worried about their party than they are about the constitutions they swore to uphold. And until the American people, you know, it's kind of like a magician. You know, the Supreme Court case I was talking about, it's like a magician. Everyone's focusing on, oh, it's a citizenship question. It's a citizenship question, completely ignoring the other hand where you have the Supreme Court attempting to take over the federal government by overruling the other two branches, a mm-hmm. power it does not have. Mm-hmm. Everybody's focusing on the bread and circuses. So telling them, you know, hey, your representative is bribing you. Hey, your presidential candidate that's making all these promises, they can't do a single one of them. It's not, they can't, you know, you can't sign an executive order that overturns the Bill of Rights. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you will, maybe they can. Maybe we've gone so far that the American people would let it happen because they don't know and they don't recognize. You have a soft coup inside the federal government with the Supreme Court turning into the legislature and the executive. And everyone's paying attention to, well, is Donald Trump going to listen to them? I have an opinion on that. In fact, I have a rather salty opinion. You see, the court does not have the authority to change law or, by the way, to implement policy. And in fact, the famous court case Marbury versus Madison, the court recognized that it has no authority to order the executive to do anything. Mm-hmm. Even though the opinion of that case said, yes, Marbury had a case. Yes, it was right for him to bring it here, but we have no authority to order Mr. Madison, the Secretary of State, to do anything. Exactly. So they don't have the authority to order it. Now, personally, I think if we're going to follow the Constitution, the first thing Congress should do is Congress should get up on its hind legs. It should probably pass a resolution saying, listen, you, court, you have gone well beyond your authority. By the way, any authority beyond a few enumerated jurisdictions in the Constitution, you get from Congress. You know, in fact, I would love to see a few articles of impeachment where they literally quote this opinion and say, if you signed on to this opinion, you have acted badly. You have behaved badly, which, by the way, is the actual constitutional term for the length of a federal judge's term mm-hmm. during good behavior. You don't behave well, you get booted. It's time for Congress to say, you don't have the authority to take a law that we have passed, that we have implemented, and say, even though we've done it, you can't use it. Sorry, unless you can prove it's unconstitutional. You cannot say it's constitutional, but you can't do it.
Right.
That's beyond your authority. I would also love to see Mr. President Trump take that opinion, and say, thank you very much. But no, because by your own words, the Constitution question can be on the census. By your very words, the secretary made his decision based on the evidence in front of him. By your very words, there's no reason why I can't do that except you don't like it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly.
And then I'd love to see him wrap it up. Of course, people would go absolutely bananas and the media would be crazy. But I'd follow up a little quote from some unknown little founding father by the name of Alexander Hamilton. See, he wrote in Federalist 78, he said, the judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or the wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatsoever. It may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend on the aid of the executive arm, even for the efficacy of its judgment.
There you have it.
The court can't do anything. They issue opinions. They do not issue laws. They do not issue rulings. They issue opinions. And Mr. President should say, thank you, because your opinion said I can do that. The fact that you don't want me to is immaterial.
That's correct. Well, and I think
as much as it'd be a brouhaha, I think it would be a discussion worth having as to, do we have three branches of government that have checks and balances or not?
Amen. Well, I think you need to put in a call to Mr. President and have this discussion with him, Paul. Paul, we're getting towards the end of our time together, and I could go on for another 56 minutes. But listen, here's I'd like you to just let's recap. Where does this leave us? Where can our listeners find more information? And folks, if you're just joining us, we're on with Paul Engle with the ConstitutionStudy.com. Very, very important website. Very critical that you learn this information. Paul, let's take it home for us.
Thank you. Yes. What's critical for the American people to do is you recognize we have spent probably 130 years making a mess out of the governments in this country. And it's not going to be fixed overnight. If we want our children to live in a better land than we do, if we want our children and grandchildren to have more liberties, more freedoms, more opportunities than we have, then we have to be willing to pick up the work, to pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honors to restoring the liberties that our founding fathers purchased for us and that millions have paid for in blood and pain and toil. And the way to do that is to start by understanding what this supreme law of the land is. It's not hard. The Constitution Study is a great place to start. And I have a YouTube channel. I have a Facebook page. And what I do is I have two classes of things that I work on. I take a lot of news events and I look at them not through a political lens, but through a constitutional lens to help us to look at these things. And what does the Constitution say? I have others that are a little more, you know, pondering ideas, but they're there. But what I really love is I love to answer people's questions. You can place them in the comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on the website, constitutionstudy.com. And I answer these questions frequently, not just individually. I'll write articles about them. I'll create videos about them. Because if you're asking that question, there's probably a million other Americans that are asking it as well.
Exactly.
So if we can take and start learning that information and encouraging others to do it as well. The idea of the Constitution is groups of people reading and studying the Constitution for themselves. That Amen. Interaction, that listening to other people's points of view, and then going back to the document and saying, well, does the Constitution actually say that? We'll create a group of electorate, a group of people, a group of citizens who will realize the power they have over their governments and realize the proper way to use that power. And the proper way to use their rights without infringing on the rights of others. So that's, I think, the best way to go forward for the people is to read, find resources, and then share with others.
Paul, I can't thank you enough for being with us, and I know we're going to have you on again. And folks, if you have any questions for Paul, you're certainly welcome to go to his website, constitutionstudy.com, or you can email us here at info@1180wfyl.com. Paul Engle, thanks once again so much for you being with us this evening, this afternoon, or this morning, whenever it is, and we look forward to the next time we get together.
Thank you very much. I look forward to joining you again in the near future.
Excellent. Thank you. Folks, you're listening to 1180 WFYL. Tim Liebig signing off for now. We'll see you soon. See you.